responsibility, and I'd like to welcome you to this special event tonight. We are very fortunate to have with us Dr. Rakoma Martone and Dr. Alam Jarrar. They are on a Right to Healthcare tour, and they come today directly from San Francisco, where they gave presentations at the annual meeting of the American Public Health Association. So we'd like to welcome them to Sacramento for Dr. Martone, a second visit, because she was here 8 years ago. Tonight's event is co-sponsored by Jewish Voice for Peace and Physicians for Social Responsibility with the endorsement of Sacramento Area Peace Action. I would like to give special thanks to Ellen Brahms for arranging for our speakers to come here to Sacramento today, and also special thanks to Rabbi Alyssa Wise and Stephanie Fox of Jewish Voice for Peace for bringing them here and bringing them back to the Bay Area today. And I guess the traffic wasn't bad in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, but it was bad getting closer to Sacramento, so we really appreciate your coming out. Also want to thank the Sierra Sacramento Valley Medical Society for use of their conference room. I'd like to thank Mikos Faberson for all the terrific audiovisual support. And to Randy Van Dalsen and Michael Stavros of Media Edge for filming tonight's presentation for a future broadcast of Media Edge, which is shown on Sunday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. on Comcast Channel 17, and they have conveniently placed cards on the chairs for your consideration, for your reminder. If you haven't already, I'd like to ask you to silence all electronic devices. There are bathrooms on both floors of this building, directly outside of the entrance to this room, and also on the first floor. And if you are a CSUS nursing student, there are sign-up forms in the back. It may not have your teacher's name on it, but you could sign your name and just make sure you clearly write the name of your teacher so we can get that to the school for your credits. If you need a signature from one of us, then just pick someone and we'll fill out the form for you. For the question and answer period, we're going to be set up in the aisle. If you don't mind going to the microphone so we can record the question and everyone can hear it. If you're not able to do so, you can just state it as loud as you can, and then we'll repeat the question for everyone to hear. PSR believes that access to quality health care is a human right, not only in our country, but around the world. And tonight, we will hear about the current state of health care in occupied Palestine and learn what some of the challenges are in providing comprehensive health services. Our speakers tonight, as I already said and introduced, are Dr. Martone, founder of Physicians for Human Rights Israel, and Dr. Jarrar of the Palestinian Medical Relief Society. Physicians for Human Rights Israel was formed in 1988, at the beginning of the Intifada. It was formed by Dr. Martone and Israeli and Palestinian physicians, motivated by the conviction that, quote, every person has the right to health in its widest possible sense, as defined by the principles of human rights, social justice, and medical ethics. Their activities are a mixture of the direct delivery of health care services and education, campaigning against bureaucratic restrictions that prevent health care access, and speaking out against the policies and repression that creates the disadvantages in the first place. In the late 1990s, Dr. Martone was especially active against the torture of Palestinian prisoners, her campaign culminating in 1999 with the Israeli Supreme Court making it illegal. Later that year, she and PHRI received Israel's highest human rights honor, the Emil Grunzweig Award for Human Rights. In 2010, she accepted the Right Livelihood Award, described as the alternate Nobel Prize, on behalf of PHRI and their work. Dr. Alam Jarrar is Director of Community-Based Rehabilitation for the Northern West Bank for the Palestinian Medical Relief Society. PMRS, formed in 1979, is a grassroots community-based Palestinian health organization. It is nonprofit, voluntary, and one of the largest health NGOs in Palestine. PMRS's national health programs emphasize prevention, education, community participation, and empowerment. Programs include community-based rehabilitation, children's health, health education, psychosocial assessment and counseling, volunteer programs, women's health, youth programs, and mobile clinics. PMRS operates 26 primary health care centers in the West Bank and Gaza. Dr. Jarrar is also a member of the steering committee of the Palestinian Non-Governmental Organizations Network, an umbrella organization comprising 132 member organizations. Its overall goal is to reinforce the role played by NGOs through contributing to the development and empowerment of civil society within an independent Palestinian state based on the principles of democracy, social justice, and respect for human rights. It gives me great pleasure to turn the program over to Drs. Martone and Jarrar.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you very much for coming tonight. It's really our pleasure, me and Dr. Rohama Martone, to be here in Sacramento. For me, it's the first time. For Dr. Martone, this is the second time. Actually, we, with Dr. Rohama, we're here in this trip attending mainly the APHA conference, which is the American Public Health Association, presenting actually our work together and our perspective to the situation in Palestine with regard to health sector, health services, and challenges that are facing health professionals, health organizations in Palestine. At the same time, also, we were presenting our cooperation as defenders for human rights, whether Israelis and Palestinians, and how we cooperate in order to improve access for quality care, and also to present our perspective that healthcare is about human rights, is about respecting human rights and respecting human dignity. In my presentation, actually, I will try to focus on first, our perspective to health and how Medical Relief Society and other health organizations were responsive to health needs of the population during the last maybe 20 or more years. And at the same time, how organizations, especially working in health field, have been instrumental in building resilience of Palestinian people and contributing in the overall national movement against occupation, for liberation, and for freedom of the Palestinian people. Lastly, we will say something about maybe our joint cooperation with regard to how we do some work in improving access of people to health services. First of all, I would like to say something about Palestinian Medical Relief Committees. Palestinian Medical Relief Society, which actually before, in the 70s, early 80s, it was committees that were established on voluntary basis, grassroots organizations, organization that has been established on voluntary basis, composed of health professionals, doctor, and paramedical staff as well, and the main idea was to provide health services for the poor population, marginalized groups, and to outreach people in their remote areas. At the same time, to contribute in building resilience of Palestinians to confront and to cope maybe with the difficulties that are posed by the Israeli occupation. Also at the same time, we were trying also to present and to introduce a new perspective for health which is based on community health approach. Health as a human right. We strongly believe that health is a human right. We don't believe that health is just merely an absence of disease. It's rather a status of well-being, whether it is social or mental well-being. And that could not be guaranteed. I mean, the overall concept of health as a human right could not be guaranteed without ensuring basic civil and political human rights of the people. PMRS, as an organization, as a health organization, believes first and foremost in social justice. And we believe that social justice is a way to provide people with better health. So our perspective on this is social justice is a base for ensuring quality of health for the people. Second, we believe in community participation and in community empowerment. Without the participation of community, we cannot talk about quality of health care services. And also we believe in integrated approach that it's not only medical personnel or professionals that are responsible for providing healthcare. It should be looked at as a multi-sectorial provision where other sectors, especially the education sector, should be involved in this process. PMRS working in unstable situation. This has been the case for around 30 years, and still is, by the way. It is unstable situation. We call it a chronic emergency that we have been living through all those years. Second, lack of access, which is the right word, lack of access for health and medical services. It's not because people cannot afford services or cannot get those services, but the idea that people physically are obstructed to get those services because of political considerations, because of political factors. And the last one, the whole situation, I mean the whole dynamics of and the complex of the political and the social situation has resulted in what we call social suffering. So people are under social stress, under psychological stress, all through like decades without having their problems solved. So this is the overall context where health professionals and Palestinian Medical Relief Society is working. In brief, in words, in very simple, straightforward words, Palestine is a country under siege. And this is just the picture of the wall. By the way, the wall parts of the wall that has been built almost 600 kilometers on the Palestinian land. Few words about the history of the conflict. The conflict has been there now for more than 64 years. And some people say even more than 64 years. But the result was devastating on Palestinians and I think on Israelis as well. Millions have been turned into refugees who were living in Palestine, fled to other Arab countries in 1994 and in 1967. Now millions of 4 million refugee population are living outside Palestine, Palestinians. Second, the whole situation have been of oppression, deprivation, humiliation, and exclusion. These are the processes that were taking place at different levels, whether politically or socially. I just want to recall what Mr. Dugard, who is a very well-known figure in human rights field, he said that the whole history between 1967 until now of the Palestinian territories could be characterized by these three words. One is military occupation. Second, is colonization process. It's not simply just military occupation, but also building colonies inside Palestinian land and moving population, Israeli population, from Israel to the Palestinian territories. And according to international law, this is considered as a war crime, by the way. And third is racial discrimination, which is most important. Now, after 40 years of this process, we can say that there are two systems inside the Palestinian territories, one for the Palestinians and one for the Israeli settlers. And the racial discrimination that has been developed into a kind of official policy of Israel is practiced not only against Palestinians inside the Palestinian territories, but also against Palestinians living inside Israel. And by the way, those who are living inside the way, they are almost 1,600,000 people, Palestinians. In addition to these three major characteristics, I think what we are also recalling is a social phenomenon, social injustice, or social injustices that have been there in the Palestinian territories. This is just a map that illustrates, the West Bank, Gaza, including, of course, the West Bank, including Jerusalem, with the population that are there. Almost in the West Bank and Gaza, there are around 4 million people. In Israel, there are like 7 million people. But if you calculate, the equation between Palestinians and Jews within what we call the mandated Palestine, the historical Palestine, it's almost 50%. But what we have now, actually, is a racial discrimination system that is ruling, the population there. Oslo. People talk about Oslo a lot. Oslo has been signed here in Washington in 1993. And when signed, people were hoping that this will end, as we say, with a happy end, where peace will prevail between Palestinians and Israelis. And by the way, Oslo was meant to be in two stages. One is what we call temporary stage, and the other one is a permanent stage. Unfortunately, Oslo has led to more deterioration of the situation. And look at this map on your left. These red spots are settlements. Israel has taken an advantage of signing this agreement. And those 5 years that were supposed to be as a temporary stage were, first of all, turned into a permanent one. And at the same time, Israel took the advantage to move more than 200,000 settlers inside the area of the West Bank and building this red spots area. And if you can imagine that this, after this, we can have a Palestinian state. What Israel has done during the last 19 years is just destroying the possibility of having a two-state solution. And instead of concluding on a peace agreement, a permanent peace agreement in 1999, what happened was, on the contrary, actually, deterioration at all levels, including building the wall, separating Palestinians from each other and imposing new measures that have not been there ever during the last 40 years. What is happening on the ground now is, in reality, is just destroying or maybe affecting the cohesion of the Palestinian people. Actually, what we are having now, the Palestinian area or territories have been turned into three completely segregated locations. One is the Gaza Strip, one is the West Bank, and one is Jerusalem. And people, Palestinians, cannot move between those three areas. So each, like a cluster of people, cannot have this continuation with the, their brothers and their sisters and you know, other community members. Access. I would like also to emphasize on this that the main phenomena that we are facing is the limited access to health services and to otherwise services as well. We talk about not only the physical the prevention of physical access, but also making people making access for health services more difficult for people. This is just an illustration about the closure regime, the checkpoint regime, as we call it. And according, you know, to many figures, there were like 600 checkpoints located all over the West Bank, segregating Palestinian areas from each other. And who decides actually whether this woman is in need for hospitalization, in need for medical care, is not a doctor, is not a nurse, is not a health professional, but the soldier who decides exactly. And out of this, we have registered cases of people, of women who delivered on those checkpoints, of some women who have been, inflicted harms where complications of, their delivery have happened. And we have registered cases of people who have died, actually, because of the prevention of, moving to health facilities. So access problem, in my mind, is a major problem when it comes to the Palestinian context. Obstruction, those are what we call them gates around the world, where, Palestinians are living on both sides, but they are locked off by the keys, and the keys are with the soldiers. And whenever they want to open them, they open them. And whenever they close them, they just close them in front of the people. And this is just a sign that has been put by the army that this area is forbidden to enter by especially the medical staff, by any other residents that are not residing in this area. Poverty, just a few words about poverty, because we believe that health, when we talk about health, it's a social phenomenon. And we believe that poverty is leading to low education, low social class, and low income, and inequalities. And this affects the overall health situation. And this is our understanding where poverty is completely linked with the health status of the population. And we also believe in the social determinants that are affecting or impacting the health conditions of people. I just listed three conditions that I saw important to just put in front of you. According to many studies, by the way, we have registered standard growth, amongst children due to ill nutrition. And of course, you can link it to the political situation and to the social situation. Second, we have a very serious problem when it comes to social suffering, because social suffering resulted in a kind of mental ill well-being. Let me say it in this way. Yes, we are facing a very serious problems when it comes to mental well-being of the population. And the last condition that I just wanted to share with you is the NCD problem, which is non-communicable disease problem, which is rising. We talk about the rise in, cancer patients. We talk about the rise of cardiovascular diseases. And we talk about rise of diabetes, for instance. A considerable amount of our people are suffering from diabetes. And whenever you talk about Palestine, from one side you have poverty and you have diseases for the third world. And from the other side, you have a rise in non-communicable diseases. So the picture there is very complicated and very strange. Responding, what we do is just responding to all those needs, especially with regard to access. And this is exactly what we do with Dr. Rahama and her group. We try to outreach people, and we try to do some looming advocacy work with regard to human rights and violation of human rights. We did a lot of work on the issues of how to defend human rights when it comes to the violation of health rights of the population. Our friend here also mentioned the work of Physicians for Human Rights and Dr. Rahama in particular about defending the rights of the health rights of prisoners, which is very important. We also believe in social action. We don't believe that health is just merely about providing services, maybe in a community manner, but also we believe that social action is also part of health responsibility. And our friend also said something about the social responsibility of medical staff. We do it in other terms, but it's the same maybe belief and understanding that medical staff has this social responsibility for the issues related to their community. Thus, whenever we talk about social responsibility, we're talking about strengthening the resilience of the people, at addressing their needs, and influencing the social policies with regard to the situation both in Gaza and in the West Bank. The last thing that I wanted to say, I just tried to put the challenges, and whenever I prepare this presentation, I put like five challenges that are confronting Palestinians working in the field of health, etc. But when I came here, I just erased them and put one challenge. It's just to keep up the spirit for us and for you in order to continue to serve our people and to defend the rights of the people to live in dignity and in peace. Thank you.
Good evening. Really, thank you for coming. I'm quite excited to be here. The last time was that I was here, like 8 years ago, was cut against my willing, and no one's fault it was. And I'm really happy to have the opportunity to come again, to meet some familiar faces, and maybe to know some other. So thank you really for coming. I would like to tell you maybe like two. That's for me, thank you. He's a good friend. So let me tell you a little bit about Physicians for Human Rights Israel, and then another little bit about what's going on now. And maybe you have some questions that will bring up other issues, because it's impossible to cover what's ever going on in Israel and Palestine. So talking about Physicians for Human Rights Israel, we started, or were established 25 years ago together, as an outcome to the first Intifada. that started in Gaza Strip. We have been in the beginning 11 people. Now we are around 2,000 people. More than a half are medical professionals. The other half are members, volunteers, good people from all kinds, I mean, from Israel, saying, Israel, please do not do the common mistake of thinking just about Jews. Israel has 20% or a little bit more of Palestinian citizens which have the same ID card, same citizenship, maybe not the same rights. I mean, the same rights, but not the same rights in reality. But this is a very long story which I will not tell you about unless you ask. And so saying that we are Israelis, I'm referring to Jews and to Palestinians, citizens of Israel. We started 11, now we are around 2,000. Co-working, meeting each and every week, from time to time, more than once a week. Our Palestinian colleagues, and not only colleagues, Palestinian population from the West Bank, like Dr. Alam Jarar, from the medical relief, but not only the medical relief. We are co-working or in all kinds of relationship, even with the Hamas, and all kinds of other medical NGOs, Palestinian NGOs. To make it short, I'll try to tell you what are the main things for PHR Israel. Our main idea is that, like human rights monitoring, keepers, something like that. Defenders, this is the right way. We are working against wrongs done by men to men or by people to people. Our first mission is not struggling against viruses or bacteria, though we are doing it on a daily basis. But the medical and the health services are instrumental for the human rights principle. We are not a humanitarian group in any way. When we are going to the West Bank, and we are going every Saturday, every Shabbat, if you like, doing a mobile clinic in a place that our Palestinian friends or colleagues we are discussing, they will choose it. And we will check each and every person that will come. It might be between 200 to 500 people. And usually it's in between those numbers. So we are serving medicine, yes. But we don't think that we can or we want to solve the health problems on a national scale. We cannot. What we are doing is demonstrating against the situation that brought us there, that people cannot cross from time to time. Families are divided. One is on one hand, or on one side of this wall or fence or whatever, and the other family are on the other side, which is not simple to cross. So this segmentation of the Palestinian society is a terrible thing to have. It stops health, medicine, education, work, social fabric, family fabric. And we are there to demonstrate against it, to protest against it. By the way is not the right way to say it, but we are not just sitting there in a demonstration, we are working in medicine in the same time, bringing kind of goodwill and kind of building kind of bridges between the two people. And this brings me to the other point. Sorry. That what we are doing, working against the segregation, against the oppression, via co-working with Palestinians, it shows or may show an alternative way to the violence, to the hatred. And we are doing it for 25 years. So it's a very good kind of record or history. And we continue to do it. Not only this Saturday's mobile clinic, we created another kind of mobile clinic once a month from women to women. I mean, only women will come, and only women will examine them, treat them, whatever, which is really very important. For me, it's excellent. Then we are doing few times a year medical conferences in the West Bank. What does that mean? Not only teaching and training and so on, which is excellent, the best doctors in Israel are doing that. But this is a kind of protest against this blockage that medical students, doctors all over the place cannot get to medical conferences, to get better training, to see what's going on in the Western, I must say, world in medicine. So if they cannot go out, we are coming in and doing those days of training. Either there are those theoretical conferences or practical surgery for 1, 2, or 3 days in a certain hospital, certain Palestinian hospital that we choose together. And of course, in those days, Palestinian patients will gain because they will be operated on in the best way. But this is B. A is the training, and maybe A1, if you like, is what I said before. You cannot go out, so we go in. Trying to show there is another way, and I believe there is another way. I don't know how much time I do have. There is a lot to say of this issue, which is very dear to me. I'm really working more. Okay, forget it. I would like to say a few words about the Palestinian prisoners. I guess that everyone here knows about the hunger strike that took place a few months ago, and still, for some prisoners, 3 that I know up to one day ago, are still striking, hunger striking. And one of them is over 100 days. It's unbelievable that, I mean, he drinks water and gets some minerals and vitamins, but he's really absolutely not eating a thing 115 or 16 days up to date. He lost his sight, and most of, I mean, I can go into numbers and medical facts. I do not wish to do it. But what does that mean? I really would like to raise the awareness about these prisoners, but those prisoners, the hunger strikers, are fighting for all the prisoners, the political prisoners, which in Israel they are called the security prisoners. No, they are political prisoners. And a big amount of them are in administrative detention, which means to the non-lawyers here in the audience, which I guess everyone is being imprisoned without charge, without trial for 6 months that can be renewed forever. And the lawyer, if there is one, cannot see the charges. It's secretive. So the person cannot know what he is charged, what his crime is. The person cannot know when he will be released. Because if someone is convicted, he or she knows it's 1 year, it's 10 years, it's so on. But this person can never know. It might be tomorrow, but it might be far in the future. And this is really destroying, it makes people in great anxiety, they are insecure, the sense of future is destroyed. So I will tell you only on one prisoner because of the time, and I guess that this story of Khader Adnan is representing the whole thing. He started his hunger strike alone, not with any other prisoners. It's an open-end hunger strike. He knew he could die. Because, I mean, there is an end to how much a person, even drinking and maybe having all kinds of minerals, can stay without eating. But he said, I'm so much against this administrative detention of myself and of others. I'm so much against the cruel ways of being interrogated. He even didn't say tortured. A nice and really, I don't want to say polite, really a kind man, a kind person. And he said, I will starve to death unless you will release me. And many outcomes were to this thing. Other prisoners started hunger strike, and in a certain point, there were, according to whom, it doesn't matter, 1,600, and according to the Israelis, according to the Palestinians, over 2,000 prisoners were under hunger strike for a month. 1 month less, 1 day. That was huge. Mm-hmm. And a lot of outcomes. First of all, it was known in Israel, and most of my people, the Israelis, the Jewish Israelis, are looking steadily to the other side when we are talking about human rights or any other rights of Palestinians. They don't want to know. And this is very strong. When a person doesn't want to know something, there is no way to let him or her know. So he raised this question in and brought it into the public, and then a strange thing happened. Human lives are not sorry, I'm jet lagging and I miss my words. Anyone here knows Hebrew? Bezol, I mean, it's cheap. Thank you, you see. It's the same, as far as I can judge, because I'm not an expert on the American people. But here, life are also very cheap. Not every life, maybe, but most lives. I'm not talking about the Lynch period, which was not so far away historically, but commonly. And this is why you and us, Israelis, are building so very many huge prisons and all kinds of solitary confinement and awful things that men are doing to men or people doing to people. So in spite of everything I said just now, this prisoner, this hunger striker, Khadr Adnan, managed in a very paradoxical way to create a situation that everyone in the government and in the high society of Israel was anxious to keep him alive. God forbid that he will die in his hunger strike. So that was really interesting. We didn't dare, Physicians for Human Rights, we didn't dare to write it anywhere or to say it aloud then, because we were afraid that it will harm the other hunger strikers. But to my understanding, this is very true. And he was released, not via court, via, you know, all kinds of agreements out of court, which is a shame, because the court, the military court, the civil court, the high court, found all kinds of excuses not to deal with the problem of administrative detention, of the unbelievably bad ways of interrogation. So, tell me when my time is over. Who will tell me? You will tell me.
Yeah, we want to have time for questions. And
okay. So, of course, there is no end to what one can pay. Thank you very, very much.
Jewish Voice for Peace. Okay. I'm Ellen Brahms with Jewish Voice for Peace, and now is our time for questions. And we also have a collection bowl for folks if you'd like to make a contribution for the room charges and so on. And we also still have some refreshments back there if you'd like. So I'd like to call upon you to come forward. And who had a mic? Oh, okay, sorry. So can you wend your way to the mic over there? Okay, Dr. Durston.
Hi, I'm Bill Durston. The last time Dr. Mortone and John from Palestine came and talked, I was surprised to learn that the blockades are not just between, for example, the West Bank and moving into Israel, but also within the West Bank. Can you describe the situation, what it's like now for people, Palestinians, as opposed to Jewish settlers, to try to move within the West Bank itself?
Yeah, easy.
the situation is more or less as it was. In a way, it's a bit better, but in another way, it's worse. So there is not one answer to it. So because the wall that you could see in Dr. Alam's PowerPoint slides is eating, really, actually eating Palestinian land and Palestinian agriculture, because farmers cannot go freely to their own land to cultivate the trees or any other kind of agriculture they are used to do for ages. So that was not, did not exist 8 years ago. Now it is the rule. And those children have to wait there until the soldier will open the gate. Going to school, coming back to school, and if the soldier lost his watch or something, they can wait. If we are talking about health, or even more narrow, medicine, people can, in emergency cases, cannot cross those huge gates. On the other hand, so this is really terrible, on the other hand, there are much, not much, but less checkpoints within the West Bank. And there are no checkpoints in the Gaza Strip. Gaza Strip is a prison, surrounded, sealed all over its borders. But inside Gaza Strip, there are no checkpoints anymore. Only it's condensed and they cannot go out, almost. I guess I answered the question.
Did you want to add something?
No.
Okay. Next question. Maggie?
This is the little microphone again. The world's smallest microphone is this big. Thank you both very much for coming. I actually lived 6 months in the West Bank and worked with, of course, a lot of Palestinian and Israeli activists. My question is about, I guess, sort of Israeli society, and you know, we knew that there were kind of a sort of an Occupy movement there several months ago, with, you know, conditions for Jewish Israelis not being very good. We know that, you know, I've heard about, you know, kind of a almost pogrom is going on against Palestinians. And a recent poll that Omar Barghouti shared was that Jewish Israelis, their rate of racism against Palestinians is very high. And I'm just wondering if you could comment about, talk about Jewish Israeli society and also what's going on for Palestinians inside Israel, and, you know, how, I mean, what we've heard about is more repression, people that are trying to do BDS and it being illegal, and so sort of how is activism happening, and what do you see kind of as trends within the society? Thanks.
So is it your, do you want to take it or you want to take it?
So it's many questions in one question. I hope I remember all of them. The Israeli society, or let me say the Jewish Israeli society, is on one hand, there are always two hands, at least two hands, on one hand becoming more militaristic, more nationalistic, more religious, and the combination of these three is terrible. And it, oh, no electricity, you will not be able to hear me.
Oh, no. He just adjusted the air conditioning.
Good. because I have a low voice, I'm sorry. So this becoming more and more. I mean, maybe not so very many more people on this side, but this phenomena becoming more rooted, more profound. On the other hand, many of the young generation, the very young generation, around 20 up to 30, and maybe a little bit more, some of them are really thinking young people. They are not listening to the Israeli TV or reading most of the, if any, of the newspapers and so on. They are thinking, not quoting. And you can find them in the Anarchist Against the Wall. You can find them in all kinds of groups that are co-working with Palestinians, young people like Tarabut, like Ta'ayush, and so on. They are very, very active, especially the youngsters that are going every Friday. And every Friday is every Friday to those villages, Bil'in, Na'alin, Budrus, and some more, not so very many. Every Friday they are demonstrating there in a kind of a non-violent demonstration, but they are getting shot at either by, always by gas. Tear gas. Different tear gas. One friend of mine was killed. I mean, killed by a canister of tear gas that was shot against him in his chest from short distance, and he died. A young, wonderful man. And live ammunition from time to time and so on. But they are doing it for years. Not so very far ago, we did a kind of anniversary or birthday, if you like, of 6 years of this anti-wall demonstrations. But if I have to be, you know, to answer your question, the situation is worse than it was. Did I answer all these little questions?
Question mainly for Dr. Jarrah, I think.
Racism against the was a racism in your question, if I remember correctly. Ah, yeah, yeah, I know what you mean. That was last year. It was, I didn't like it, personally, at all. I mean, at all. They were better than others, but it was impossible to talk to those, not only young, but mainly young people, about anything connected to the occupation, about anything connected to Palestinians, about anything connected to human rights at all. It was a kind of weird economic demonstration. I mean, it's very important. I don't think it's not important to demonstrate against the price of white cheese. We call it cottage. But you cannot stop there. Intelligent young people should see the connection between the things, and they actively refuse to see it. So I just forgotten to talk about them, but because they are so far away from me. Thank you.
David has a question for Dr. Jarrah.
Yes, I'm familiar generally with the state of higher education in the occupied territories, with the universities that are sometimes closed arbitrarily, and students have trouble getting to and from class. But specifically, if you could talk a little bit about education in the health sciences. Are there medical schools in the West Bank and Gaza? Are there other medical professions? Are people able to become certified and educated so that they can serve their people?
Yeah, thank you very much for the question. Yes, I think we have two medical schools in the West Bank. One is located nearby Jerusalem. It's called Jerusalem University in a locality called Abu Dis, if anybody knows where is Abu Dis. And we have also a medical school inside Gaza, by the way. But the number of students in three medical schools are very limited. And the capacities, maybe, of the three medical schools are very limited as well. We have, in addition to that, we have one university that also educate staff nurses. And we have many schools in the field of practical nurses. And at the same time, our universities also teach, lab technicians, paramedical staff in general. It has maybe not to do with the amount of professionals that are in the West Bank and Gaza. They are more than we need, actually. And many of them are working in Jordan. Maybe the best medical services that are provided in the region is considered Jordan. But if you go to Jordan and see who are the professionals there who are providing this highly sophisticated medical service, you find them Palestinians. The idea that we don't have the choice, we don't have, the decision. We are locked in a way, and we don't have the ability to build our own infrastructure and to build our own future. This is the problem. The problem, in essence, is a political one. Is denying Palestinians for their political and civil rights. This is the basis of the problem. Maybe when we talk about education here inside the West Bank and Gaza, for instance, Rohama said something about Gaza. The problem in Gaza, for instance, that people cannot move inside Gaza. If you need to maybe to bring professionals to do some education or build the capacities of the medical staff there, you don't have access to that. In the West Bank, almost the same. Maybe the West Bank is less, but you have the kind of the problems that we don't have enough and free communication with the outside world when it comes to building our capacities and competences in the health field. Did I answer your question?
Sauber?
Yes. I would like to make a comment. I just came back from Palestine for a visit, and I can relate to everything that was said by Dr. Jarrar and our colleague. Usually I go and visit also, I cross to Gaza. But this time I could not go because of the restrictions and the checkpoints. You have to go from Jerusalem to Jordan, then you go to Egypt, if you are allowed to go back to Gaza, but it used to be. And I live in Jerusalem, and every time I want to go to the West Bank, there is a lot of restriction. And the Israelis, they do not differentiate between an American citizen from a Palestinian origin or a Palestinian. So I can relate. From the picture that I saw, I know a story that they say, is this woman pregnant? The humiliation. There was a Palestinian woman, I know, that she came and she was pregnant and she was a Jew. But they say, oh, you are not pregnant. You are just faking it. Then she was not allowed to pass. She went on the side, and she got her baby there. She found a good stone, and she cut the pelvic here, and she tied the child, and she went back. So it is really that is very bad. The checkpoints, that's a woman I know from this trip. My question, you know, Dr. Jarrahi said, we integrated approach and there are some obstructions. Who does it? And you mentioned also the siege, the Palestinian under siege, and also the Jews in Israel and Palestine are under siege. Could you elaborate how the siege and the occupation is affecting the Palestinian mentality and also the Israelis?
These are like five questions.
I know. But they were raised.
Okay, I just wanted to present the idea here behind all these difficulties that people are facing, where the whole country, the whole society is under siege. They are under siege first because the country is divided into three isolated clusters, and this is reality. Jerusalem people cannot, they can move to the West Bank, but they cannot go to Gaza. West Bankers cannot go to the to Gaza and Jerusalem as well. Gaza people cannot go to Jerusalem, West Bank, and sometimes to Gaza itself because of the, you know, invasions that are happening in Gaza. So the idea here that we have been harmed and badly affected when it comes to the cohesion of our society. The same social fabric has been affected by measures, imposed measures by the Israeli military authorities. This is one fact. The second fact that there is the situation of siege, you have the wall that is built over the Palestinian land and left like 150,000 people behind this wall. And they cannot move unless they have a special permission from their place to other Palestinian place outside the wall. So the idea of siege here is there amongst not only the 150,000 people, but also for others who cannot also access this land. And this land, by the way, is 13% of the land of the West Bank. Third, the siege concept has been there or introduced by the Israelis since 2000, profoundly in a way that people, when they deployed this, what they call a checkpoint regime, they deployed something like 600 checkpoints. And you can just go back to UN reports and you can find 600, even 20 something even. And the regime was meant just to isolate people from each other and just to destroy what unifies, you know, people together, what makes them one society. So psychologically speaking, there has been a kind of changes amongst Palestinians under this title, siege. So we are as if we are besieged, we cannot move, we are not free to move, you know, to places. Nowadays, situation in the West Bank is better. It's also a reality that I have to admit. And it's better, but those checkpoints, you know, the infrastructures, if you go to Nablus, for instance, you can, maybe you saw them, you can find them there, and any time, it's just in an instant, they just come and deploy the forces there, and the checkpoint is back. So the idea still is there, and the approach of the Israelis towards Palestinians, that they are to be locked behind bars, they have to be, you know, harmed as a society, they have to be divided according to the security perspective of the Israelis, is there. So here we're talking about both physical obstruction, you know, checkpoints, preventing people from moving, but psychologically speaking, in my mind, which is more important, it has been as if built in the minds of Palestinians, this situation of being besieged and sieged in their own country. I don't remember the other question.
Yes, there was one thing that
Palestinians inside Israel.
Inside Israel.
Inside Israel, there are many, by the way, I have to also to say that Palestinians inside Israel have the Israeli passport, have the Israeli citizenship. But when it comes to dealing with Palestinians inside Israel, there are countless studies that are talking about racial discrimination, about unequal opportunities in education, in jobs, and the latest, I can recall just the latest two studies that have been presented in Haaretz, by the way, about the situation of women from one side in terms of employment, education, and there is a big gap. And I can recall also a comparison on health indicators, especially in infant mortality rate, in life expectancy, and in other indicators in health. You can find, you know, disparities between Palestinians who are living inside Israel and Israelis from Jewish origin. So.
Yeah, Israel was a little bit smart in Ramadan. They allowed everybody to go to Jerusalem every Friday, and they allowed them to go to the green line. So the economy in the West Bank was really very hurt. I don't know if you want to elaborate on that one.
In Ramadan, they just allowed people to worship on Fridays, not every day, by the way. And the restriction was there for people over 40 years of age. Before 40 years of age, people cannot go to Jerusalem, even in Ramadan, even on Fridays. So forget about this, you know, worship, free worshiping. There was no free worshiping. The second thing, it was during the first day of Ramadan that Israel has given permissions, and I repeat, permissions for West Bankers to go inside Israel for one day in order to, you know, entertain themselves, etc. People say that behind this there were two factors. One of economic reason, that people when go to inside Israel, they can spend some money, and this is not a significant factor. But the other one was a kind of a political factor in order to make more pressure on the Palestinian Authority. This was an explanation for this. But the main idea is the continuation of the situation of occupation. And the continuation of this miserable situation when it comes to human rights and social injustices that people are living in the West Bank and Gaza and Jerusalem.
Thank you.
Would you like to address the issue of Israeli Jews under the siege, their concerns that they have? That was, I think, part of Sauber's question as well.
The Israeli society, the siege of the Israeli society is a bit complicated for me to describe it, because when one talks about the siege in Gaza, it's clear, or the siege in the West Bank, it's clear, you can see it. The Israeli society you cannot see. It exists, but in different ways, in clandestine ways. Many people, especially the young ones, not the good, the very good ones, they read only Hebrew. They don't study Arabic because it's not nice enough, it's not respectable enough. The English, which my generation used to study English, I mean, maybe you can see the results, it's not very high English, but still, it's a kind of a language. With the youngsters now, it's a disaster. They really don't know. So their mind is becoming sieged, narrow, only by Hebrew, and especially because they don't read like everyone else in the world, I'm afraid, at least in the Western world. So they are open to this information, which is not really information. It's brainwashing mainly by the TV, especially because they don't even read the newspaper so very much. But the TV is all over the place. So their mind, or our mind, is under siege. And it's easier, it's my personal understanding, it's easier to fight against siege that you can see, like a wall, like a fence, than to fight against something which is there, but it is obscure, you don't see it. But it's very influential.
Okay, we have time for a couple more questions, yeah?
Oh, I'd like to ask a question that kind of ties what's happening in Palestine, Israel with the United States. And specifically, Dr. Martin, you referred to prisoners and spoke about life being cheap. And I thought I heard you say maybe that that's the case here in the United States as well. Certainly, I could give you a lot of I could support that statement, but I wasn't sure if that's exactly what you were saying. Yes. But if you could talk about, you know, compare the U.S. Access to healthcare systems in Israel, Palestine, to access in the United States, if you can. And then also, Dr. Girard, you talked about access and obstruction to healthcare resources. If both of you could comment on that access, and maybe if do you see it mirrored here in the United States? And it, maybe that's, maybe we need to learn from each other, I think, perhaps.
Yeah.
We're
learning too much.
Hama, come, we answer the question together.
What I whispered here, that maybe we are learning too much from each other.
Yeah.
Not too much from each other, too much from the American kind of regime and understanding and behaving, and Israel is a kind of a little America.
Yeah.
To my great sorrow, because I'm an old lady, as you can see, and I was there before America was there.
Yeah.
I mean, in Palestine, Israel, it was different, and so much for the better.
Yes.
No, no, it's your turn.
Yes, I think I agree with you. There are, I think I just agree with you that there are many commonalities when it comes, you know, the situation Israel, Palestine, and what's happening in the United States with regard to maybe the question of access. Because whenever we talk about access in our country, we're talking about factors that are affecting access. Mainly, these are political factors, but at the same time, we're talking about social factors that also affecting access to healthcare in terms of social inequalities, not because of the occupation, but also because of the injustices inside the societies, in our case as well. But in the United States, when we talk about access, it's very important also to mention that social inequalities in the United States are very much visible, and the quality care is not easy to get by all Americans. And this was a dispute in your society for a long time, and it will continue to be so, although we know that there have been some changes in this respect. But the commonality here, the issue of access, yes, both in our case and in your case, and it has to do with the, one phenomena, which is the social phenomena to access healthcare. Thank you.
Maybe one thing more. I think that you heard me quite good. And maybe it's really hard to say it and hard to hear it, but there is a culture of death here and in Israel. Mm-hmm. And in the same time, the gap between the haves and the have-nots are first place in the world. Israel and the States. So it's not a chance that so very many prisons are made in your country and in my country, instead of building schools, instead of building hospitals, but not only hospitals, it's the system, health system. Because hospitals are maybe enough, but who can get there? And who cannot get there? So all those things, to elaborate about it, it's difficult in a short time. But I really see that they are connected to each other.
Okay, David is going to, is there any one last question to wrap things up? Yeah? I think so. I think you're going to be the last one. Oh, Dan always has great questions. Okay.
I had a chance to talk to students at schools, in high schools, sometimes in colleges even. And one question was raised very, very often. Now, in the United States, every night we see a movie about Germany during World War II, and always the Jewish issue is introduced. So all Americans are aware of what happened in Germany. Now, does this, I had the question from the students that told me, if the Jews were treated that way in Germany, how come they do to the Palestinians the same thing? And I don't answer that question. I say you have to ask them, not me. So now I ask, does this issue come up? Because Israelis were very oppressed in Germany. And now the same thing is happening to the Palestinians inside Palestine.
Hey, Dr. Martin.
Well, it's a very hard question. Because this comparison between what happened to Jews in Europe, not only in Germany, in Europe, in the Second World War, and what is happening in the last few decades in Israel-Palestine to the Palestinians. On one hand, this comparison just jumps up, and many people can say, well, I can see similarity between the things. On the other hand, or maybe even on the same, on the same hand, it's dangerous to talk this way, though parts of it are true to my understanding. Because the main thing in the Second World War was genocide. And there is no genocide in Israel-Palestine. There are horrible things. It's easier for me, for example, to talk about the Israeli government attitude towards the refugees that are coming every day now from Sudan, from Ethiopia, from Darfur, and so on. They are hunting them, putting them in very brand new jails without any trial for 3 years, and God knows for how long after those 3 years will end up, instead of giving them the opportunity to work, to have all kinds of social benefits, that they will be, that it will be good for them and good for the Israeli society. one cannot talk about it. So coming back, I do not wish to avoid this question, but coming back to what happened in the Second World War, it's a dangerous comparison. For me, it's almost impossible to do this comparison, not only out of personal experience, but also just in whatever theoretical thinking. Thank you.
Yes, the microphone, please.
Yeah, you answered my question because I was asking for an update on the Jews that were coming from Ethiopia and Sudan. And unless you want to elaborate, but in the context of answering that question, you updated that situation.
Okay, David.
Okay. Just in the interest of accuracy, she's talking about refugees, African refugees, non-Jews who are coming from those countries, who have been coming into Israel through Egypt. Maybe it's a whole different situation ball of wax. There are quite a few Jews who did come from Ethiopia, but the most recent issue is about other Africans who have been coming. Anyway, my role was to thank everybody for coming for a very stimulating, enlightening evening. Especially to our guests, Dr. Gerard Martin, who came a long way and are still jet lagged and will not now get to go back to the Bay Area to bed, and to the two members from the national staff of JVP who brought them here. Thanks for doing that. And the one other thank you I want to add that you didn't hear at the beginning, because it was Harry who said that, is to thank Harry Wang and Physicians for Social Responsibility for co-sponsoring this event with us. And this is what, the third or fourth or fifth event that we've co-sponsored in Sacramento, and it's really been a great partnership that finds some wonderful common ground. And I particularly appreciate it because the issue of the plight and the violations of the human rights of the Palestinians is something that's often not easy to talk about, and not every liberal or even progressive organization around is willing to take that on and able to do it. And I look forward to co-sponsoring more events, and also to being out there on the streets and in other places working together and try to do something about it. So, and same with the rest of you here. I hope we'll see you all again soon. Thanks very much.
David and the two speakers in front of the white there, just for the empty for the Alan. No, no, yes.
Pass by.